comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 64 for March 28, 2011. This is Michael Loft.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Stonekip.
Coming up, just a few of the 42 interviews that we conducted at CSUN 2011, but also available in the Information Center of SAMNET, as well as iBlink Radio. Not only our 42 interviews, but those recorded by J.J. Meadow at blindbargains.com/audio. So all kinds of great CSUN coverage. But speaking of that, the dates next year have been moved earlier, Feb 27 through March 3. And a few folks were complaining because they kind of liked that it timed out with spring break, but maybe that presented some of its own travel issues. But all those links over at serotalk.com. Let's go through what, at least from our perceptions, were some of the big news items, at least things that people were talking about. There was the partnership announced between Directions for Me and bcscan.com partnering. So those of you like myself who actually own barcode readers can actually go to bcscan.com and just scan your product and then have the information relayed back from Directions for Me.
Yeah, this is definitely a partnership that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and they're going to come out with the app for Window Eyes and maybe some other portals as well. So that's great. They're really open to making this as open as possible. Another big one, of course, the Looktel Money Reader. And, of course, you'll hear our interview about their future product identification system they want to come out with. Very exciting stuff. They'll not only use barcodes, but actual images of the products and like Omobi on steroids. So we'll see how that works.
Exactly.
But also All With My iPhone episode 26 covers this $1.99 Looktel Money Reader. Pretty simple and straightforward, but you can listen to that if you like. Ambutech, this one I have to say was probably one of the biggest announcements, certainly on the mobility front. Eyeglasses, everything's eye, that's eye,
yeah.
G-L-A-S-S-E-S, that vibrate objects that come within 3 meters or about 10 feet of your upper body. It's specifically for overhangs and poles and signs and branches and so forth. So $120 glasses and not the most cosmetically friendly, but...
No, not so much, but I think they had to start somewhere. And there have been a lot of conversations both at CSUN and on Twitter with people being curious, you know, how much information do these things really provide? What do they look like? What do they feel like? I found them very heavy and sort of uncomfortable to wear. I thought they were going to slide off my nose and crash on the floor and things like that. Again, not very attractive at all. But with that said, I think they provide a great deal of useful information, not only about whether you're going to whack into a tree limb and that kind of thing, but you can sort of sense doorways a lot more easily with these on. It's a fascinating concept. I think they've done a lot right. I just hope that the next iteration is a bit lighter and a little more attractive.
Yeah, someone made a good point, maybe having a couple different styles, like men and women's shades or something. But that and many other topics were covered in Tech Chat 94 with Jeffrey Stark and Daryl Shandrill as they expressed some of their thoughts and observations of the CSUN 2011 highlights. You can listen to that.
It would be really cool if we could get those to work with, say, Papa Sangre. That would be, you know, we're getting back to that playing in the field kind of thing, you know, where you could have vibration as you turn your head and work in alternative universes or things like that. That'd
so using really them cool. in some sort of VR situation. Very interesting.
Oh, yeah, I never thought about using it to play baseball. Like, what if it's beat baseball and someone hit so hard they broke the
hopefully
beeper?
Just, you can duck in time.
Well, or if any of you like myself, you know, blind folks out there playing basketball, be able to know that it's coming at your face. Or if you're tall like me, you could be a guard and grab the ball. Maybe have a unique sound for the ball. Of course, by then, your glasses end up falling off your face. But I don't know. There's a lot of interesting uses for this that maybe we haven't thought of yet. Serotalk invites you to our public town hall meeting taking place on Wednesday, March 30 at 9 p.m. Eastern via accessible event, SAMNET Radio, and the town hall meeting voice chat room on SAMNET. Of course, if you're hearing this after the fact, you can go listen to the archive via iBlink Radio or on SAMNET. Mike Calvo will be giving, a State of the Union address, just talking about Cerotech and current technologies and where we see the future, mobile devices and all that cool stuff. In browser news, a lot of stuff has happened in the last couple of weeks. Right after our podcast, there was a release of Internet Explorer 9. Yes, IE9 released for Windows 7 and Vista, but not XP, and certainly much, much faster. But with any browser release, there are some downsides, and the first one is Zoom text. Joe, explain this. They're actually telling people not to upgrade to IE9 right now?
Right. What happens with IE9, there's some hardware acceleration that's going on, and this kind of works a little oddly with the way that Zoom text does handling. Right now, if you're trying to do any type of forms, you're actually not getting any response back when typing in forms. And usually with a lot of assistive technology, you have to wait a bit for them to come up with an update. I believe 9.19 is going to be part of that update. And we'll see some more coming from AI Squared soon on this. But right now, they're advising everyone to just hold on to IE8 and their support so you can still keep things like App Reader and Doc Reader going.
Sorry, it says X font tracking and screen reading features are not available with IE9. So sounds like you better stay with IE8 until they come out with an official release to support it.
Indeed.
And you can always go in and hide those updates in case you need to not have it do automatically. I don't believe IE9 is an automatic update yet in Windows Update. I think it's still suggested. So there are ways to do that where you can go into Windows Update and put your application key on it and choose hide update. But at some point, it will be a mandatory update, as most Windows updates such as this usually are. It usually takes a couple of months, but that'll give them enough time to try and come around to IE9 support.
But as Michael mentioned, it is a really fast browser. I think Microsoft was feeling a little competition, and they wanted to make IE9 the best it could be. And I think now IE is a browser that you can actually take seriously rather than something you use just because of its ubiquity. Firefox 4 was recently released as well, and there's a very detailed review of it over on the Cerotalk.com show notes. I have spoken to a few sighted users about it, and they weren't happy with some of the UI changes that Firefox had done. It sort of looked the same up until version 4, but now there are some things that you kind of have to tweak to get it to look the way you want it to and to be able to access some of the things that you typically do.
My wife noticed that it actually defaulted to full screen on our install, as well as it hid toolbars. So there was some tweaking that had to be done in order to make it bring back some of the functionality that you had also noticed. And of course, as with any upgrade like this, you still have some bookmarks that need to be updated, or you might have some extensions that might not work at first.
Yeah, final thing on the browser front is a Google Chrome 11 beta, which is weird because I've already seen 12 beta, but this adds HTML5 speech input. So a lot of folks can play around with that. Again, you can get the link at cerotalk.com. A New York federal district court has rejected the controversial settlement in a class action suit brought against Google, dealing with their desire to make as many books electronically available as possible. This settlement would have allowed Google to display excerpts from print books. They've scanned in over 12 million books since 2004. Should this ever be allowed, authors and publishers may not even have a say whether Google can do that. But Microsoft, the Electronic Freedom Foundation, and of course, Open Book Alliance lawyers all say
this is anti-competitive.
Yeah, they're very concerned about Google getting some rights to these books that they should not have. Of course, the NFB responds to this. The NFB is really hoping that the settlement would go through because obviously it would give blind people access to a lot of information that is not easily available any other way. But I think they have some things to work out in terms of if you're looking at out-of-print books and things like that, you still need to maintain the rights of the authors and not just treat these out-of-print books as if they were in the public domain, because they aren't.
Indeed. In Android news, looks like TalkBack was updated with an accessible on-screen keyboard and some other features. Android, of course, was a big topic of conversation at CSUN. Joe, are these enhancements to TalkBack worth even talking about?
They do give you some added functionality, not to the extent of, say, the new mobile accessibility from Code Factory. It's great to see that people are starting to learn from what Code Factory is doing in this space. And it's certainly free. That's the best part, is that you can download this and update it. It has actually seen an update. So has Ice Free Shell has seen an update. Ice Free Shell's update is actually for tablets. So you have a 3.0 version that works in that space. So if you know anybody who has one of those new Motorola Zooms, you'll be able to try Ice Free Shell on that.
Well, a lot of people are certainly paying attention to the Android platform, including Sendero. We're going to apparently see the Lookaround app, which is very popular on iOS. That's going to be coming to Android as well. I know that Looktel, the money reader guys that we'll be hearing an interview from, they are looking at transferring their stuff to Android as well, both the money reader and some of the things that they have planned for the future.
Well, the top story in mobile phone news has to be that AT&T wanting to buy T-Mobile from Deutsche Telekom for some $39 billion. And already one U.S. senator has asked the Federal Communications Commission, as well as the Department of Justice, to ensure that it does not limit competition and that consumers do not face higher prices as a result or reduced service. Now, I would encourage folks really interested in this story to go to serotalk.com and read the complete story, because there's a lot under the hood when you really start looking into this. Because one of the things is that AT&T wants to convert all the T-Mobile users over to use their frequencies and bandwidth, and then take that spectrum that T-Mobile uses and use it to roll out to LTE. And they claim, oh, this will be great because then you'll be able to roam between AT&T and Verizon phones. But what about all the people who, first of all, pay less for their T-Mobile plans, but then also people who have prepaid phones? You know, what are they going to do? Force them to actually give up their phones? And maybe that's why AT&T has slashed their prepaid prices to pay as you go from 25 cents a minute down to 10 cents per minute, which seems to be the standard for prepaid. And they've also lowered the cost for the unlimited daily usage on days that you actually use the phone from $3 per day to $2 per day. And so this is good for people who just want that phone for emergency purposes, but maybe they're home most of the time and want to save the money. You can get $15, which I'm going to assume at 10 cents a minute is 150 minutes that you have to use within 30 days, or $25, probably your best deal, $25 for 90 days. Of course, you can also get $50 or $60 plans, or even $100 for 1 year. But also says that your minutes can roll over as long as you renew before your balance expires. So AT&T has sent out a number of texts and emails to people saying, if you are tethering your iPhone to your laptop without paying for it, guess what? We're going to automatically enroll you. We're going to automatically enroll you on March 27th.
You're in trouble.
To the tethering plan for $20.
Yeah, so if you have jailbroken your phone, a lot of people do that for the express purpose of being able to tether without paying an additional fee. You might be getting an email or a text message telling you that you've gotten away with it so far, but you can either sign up on your own and choose the data plan that you want, or the tethering plan rather, or if you don't sign up, we'll go ahead and sign up for you.
Yeah, so people may get the surprise in their next bill when it automatically jumps up in price. Another one that affects me more personally, AT&T is capping their DSL and UVerse services as far as the bandwidth. It looks like they're going to set it at 150 GB or gigabytes per month for 3 months. So I guess the first 2 months you can go wild, but on that third month you exceed 150 gig after May 2nd. You will have to pay $10 per month for each additional 50 gig. Now, those in the top tier UVerse, they get a whopping 250 gig. This has a few folks upset because that sounds like a lot of bandwidth until you start watching Netflix and doing a lot of video content.
And they do break it down. I don't know what made them decide to do this, but they do go through sort of a description of, you would spend or you'd use this much bandwidth if you sent, say, 5 billion emails or whatever it is. And they actually do list the number of movies that you could watch through Netflix before you went over on this. And of course, they're also talking about downloading torrented movies, I think. And they list a few other things, MP3s, the number of MP3s that you would download before you go over.
Well, let's just say I got a very, I won't say lengthy, but quite detailed email about new rules and regulations, all pro AT&T, of course. So certainly if you use the DSL services, that's something to be mindful of if you're playing around with torrents or doing a lot of video or audiobooks or really moving a lot of data. There are a few pieces of software you can get that'll sit down in your system tray and tell you how much bandwidth you've used. But in Apple land, they have released 10.6.7 for Snow Leopard, and it includes some security updates, bug fixes, some fixes for FaceTime, and even the App Store, some bugs where people are having problems. Also some issues with flickering on external devices, even quarantining of certain files. Should you actually get a virus?
Oh, yes, you can get a virus on the Mac. I'm sorry to ruin you.
Yes, you can. Also some airport Wi-Fi networking stuff and more. Also released 4.31 for iOS, their iPhone, and 4.21 for Apple TV to stop that flickering problem. Well, before we were talking about App Store, and Apple has sued Amazon. Coming to an App Store near you, or not. Apple is suing Amazon, accusing them of violating their App Store trademark with the Amazon App Store, of course, for Android. Now, U.S. trademark law requires that owners of trademarks vigorously defend their use or otherwise risk them becoming generic descriptions for services. Microsoft, of course, has sued, saying that App Store is a generic term. And Apple says, well, hey, so is the term Windows. So we're going to see a lot of debate and lawyers getting rich off of this. And of course, the Supreme Court has already ruled you can't trademark common words, such as freedom, for example. So we'll be curious to see where this goes. Sendero and APH have launched their Talking PC Maps. This is a Windows application for XP or later. I believe the cost, was it $269? Does that sound right, Ricky?
Did you listen to the interview? I think it was $240-something. Let's say around $250.
And it has 12 million points of interest. You can install up to 3 computers, XP or later. No screen reader required, so it is self-voicing. It does not tell you your current location, so it looks like they're really designing this for O&M instructors and maybe people who just want to install it and really get a feel for kind of what's around them. But what are your thoughts on this, Ricky? It's a little hefty price tag.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that a lot of consumers are pretty upset about the hefty price tag, and we haven't really heard from Sendero how much of that is licensing costs for the map and how much is sort of what they felt the product was worth. But I think this is meant primarily for O&M instructors to get familiar with particular areas, because you can virtually explore these areas. This is not GPS per se, in the sense that you don't go walking around with this thing and it tells you where you are. It's a method of virtual exploration. But a lot of consumers would find this product interesting, but they're having a really difficult time shelling out the $250 for it.
Yeah, it's a tool I'd like to have at my disposal. I'm just a little put back by the price. So hopefully something either more affordable or something directly on the phone so that you can use it in a real world environment. But we wish them well with it. It certainly fulfills a need for people who need that additional travel info before they feel comfortable cruising around. Navtech, spelled N-A-V-T-E-Q, announces Navtech Destination Maps. It's a tool for indoor layout detection with data for shopping malls, convention centers, including elevators, escalators, restrooms, entrance and exit doors, fire escapes, and even points of interest within, including multiple level malls. So it's smart enough to know whether you're on the first or second floor. Oh, I'd love it. It would be great to go into a mall.
I gotta say, this would be pretty useful.
But still pretty early development. Not even an app yet for the mobile phone, but they're going to put out the API for that in April. And so they're going to let developers build that out, I guess, for iOS and Android. Says they have over 200 of the largest shopping centers already covered, and they're expanding through North America, Europe, and Asia.
Well, if you're a heavy Microsoft Office user, you may want to check out this list of keyboard shortcuts specifically for Microsoft Word. So these are screen reader independent, and they're for Microsoft Word 2010. If you want to check that out, head on over to serotalk.com for the show notes. And speaking of Microsoft Office, they have recently released 2 accessibility add-ins for the Office suite. One of them is for subtitling or captioning your PowerPoint presentation. So perhaps you have an embedded multimedia presentation within your PowerPoint. You can now subtitle that. And there's also a plugin for saving your documents as DAISY. This is pretty handy. So I'm assuming that if you mark up your documents in a particular way, if you use styles to indicate headings and things like that, and especially if you have designed a sort of table of contents with different sections in your document, you're now going to be able to save this as DAISY and read it all nice and marked up on your portable device or DAISY player on the PC if you've got one of those.
While Google search is still used by 65% of people, just less than 2 out of 3, Microsoft Bing is increasing in popularity, up to 13.6%. And I say rightfully so. Ricky, I have to say quite honestly, Bing, more often than not anymore, is returning more relevant results. And that's certainly not that Google can't do it. I think they've chosen to give preference to advertisers and they're kind of playing around with it. And of course, if you know how to do the Boolean searches and put things in quotes and plus signs and ors and all that good stuff, you can get the results you want. But if you just want to go there and say type in a product user manual or something, you know, Bing's going to much more likely give you that result right up front. And I have found myself gravitating toward it. Who would have thunk it? Well, on to accessibility ouchies. Yikes. A New Hampshire lawmaker said that people with disabilities are defective and advocated eugenics. Actually, he's resigned. 91-year-old Martin Harvey told the manager of a Stratford, Connecticut community health program that the world is overpopulated and there are simply too many defective people.
Oh,
and if
yeah.
we'd simply take the mentally ill, retarded, people with physical disabilities and those with drug addictions and remove them, the society would be better off without them.
Yeah, send them over to Siberia.
Yes, he said, we wish we had a Siberia to ship them off to where they could simply freeze and die, thereby cleaning up the population. Several colleagues, of course, said that this gentleman was already confused and unfocused in his sessions. And of course, he has resigned. And they said that he did not know what he was voting for, which kind of makes me wonder, should we have some kind of competency test for people in public office?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
You know, at least some kind of comprehension to see, can they actually take in mass quantities of information and process it, you know, like we had to do in our SATs?
Right. When he resigned, I think the words he used were a little bit disturbing, too, because he said something about, oh, yes, the little matter of that little controversy. I said some stuff that people didn't agree with, so I figure I'll just go ahead and resign.
Well, apparently he even wrote a letter to the newspaper saying that he was confused and wasn't sure what he was voting for. So interesting.
Yes. Bye-bye, Martin Harvey.
Yeah, I don't want to discriminate because there certainly are, you know, people who are 90 years old that have it going on upstairs, but
I don't think this gentleman is one of them.
No, unfortunately not. Omnibus Express, a Houston bus company, was fined $55,000 for violating passenger carrier accessibility requirements under the ADA and the DOJ, Department of Transportation, basically said that they had a fleet of buses and none of them were equipped with wheelchair lifts. And I mention this story because ADA regulations require that at least 50% of carrier buses and all new leased or purchased buses must be accessible to persons with disabilities. And I wonder how many other communities aren't falling within those guidelines. Ricky, I know you have some thoughts on this one, and I do as well. But a gentleman by the name of Rich Donovan, he's a founder of a company called Wainsail Capital. It's a New York-based investment management firm. He suffers from cerebral palsy, as well as using a special tool to help him find his investments. And he says that the only way that we're going to increase employment with people with disabilities, that cannot happen until we are seen as customers and as a market. And that quite simply, these government mandates that have been tried to be pushed down through the last four presidents, and of course, a big thing you may have seen at CSUN this year, oh, government, we're going to hire more people with not only physical but mental disabilities. It's simply not working. We're down to just under 1% of government employees actually have a disability. What are your thoughts on this before I give you my 2 cents?
First of all, let me just say this is an incredibly well-written article, so I hope you don't just listen to what we have to say about this. I highly recommend reading it yourself. I believe that he's absolutely right because so many people are either mandated to hire someone with disabilities or they look at it as a charity opportunity. You know, let's make ourselves feel good by sponsoring some event that's going to help people with disabilities. All right, hey, we did our part. Now we can go back to business as usual. this doesn't change the perception within an organization about what a person with a disability is like. In fact, I think it hurts quite a lot. So it's not going to be until companies recognize people with disabilities as customers. You know, hey, these people are a market. These people have lives outside needing our charitable contribution. So not until people with disabilities are viewed as paying members who are a market are they going to be viewed as employable, because it's that step of recognizing that people with disabilities have money, they make choices, they are in fact individuals worth paying attention to instead of people to be pitied. At that point, then you can be looked at as employable.
So to accomplish that, it seemed like it would behoove the ACB and or NFB to compile data on blind member spending habits. So to that end, I would ask the question, Ricky, would you be open to actually, let's just say a database was set up, and let's just say we wanted to get 20,000 people who would be willing to document or post every purchase that they make in a year, all your grooming supplies and your food and your pet supplies and your electronics and everything that you spend, so that we have this data to go back and say, look, we are a market. Would you be willing to do that?
It's a very interesting question, and especially when there is so much going on in terms of people being able to maintain privacy. I mean, this is like opening up all of your spending habits to a group of people. Now, you would have to be able to mandate how that information is being used. You know, for me, I don't have any particular purchases that I want to hide. I'm not purchasing thousands of boxes of Sudafed or tons of fertilizer or whatever in order to work in my drug lab or anything like that. But at the same time, I don't necessarily want everyone in the world to be aware of every single thing that I buy. With that said, I don't know of a better way to indicate to companies that, yes, people with disabilities are purchasing your product.
Yeah, I'd certainly love to hear your opinions on that. Resources at serotalk.com. The ACB is proposing legislation where accessible prescription labeling, since 25 million people in the U.S. cannot adequately read their prescription labels or the related information that goes along with it, and that the FDA has no guidelines specifically for the blind. The NFB has asked the Department of Justice to investigate the adoption of Google apps in education being used at New York University as well as Northwestern University, and that it discriminates against blind faculty and students. Both universities have adopted Google Apps for both email and collaboration tools, but Google Apps for Education is a suite including Google Mail, Calendar, Docs, Google Talk, and Google Sites. And a similar request for investigation has been filed against four Oregon schools in a district who decided to use Google Apps.
I hate it that it's come to the point where a large organization needs to be involved in encouraging people either not to use Google Apps or encouraging Google to do something about the lack of accessibility of their apps. I can think of at least two Ricky rants that have popped up on these podcasts about Google Docs specifically. This is a suite that we need access to. It's popping up in employment. Corporations are using it all over the place. And now obviously schools and universities are using this suite of apps as well. And it makes sense why they're doing it, because Google did an extremely nice job of designing these apps such that you can do collaborative work. You can have this stuff in the cloud. You can access it from your mobile device as well as your computer. Those are all wonderful things, except for the minor little point that they are not usable by blind individuals.
Yeah, there was a lot. There were three, I call them closed sessions by Google, in that the people who did participate did have to sign non-disclosure agreements. So what I have heard through the vinyl grapes of people that would talk to whatever extent they would, basically that it was a complaint session and Google took a lot of input from people, and hopefully they will actually do something with it to improve the situation. But it may be one of those situations where a little legal wrangling may be necessary to make Google bring these docs into spec. I don't know. We'll have to see. It is unfortunate, though, when that has to be the alternative. An 18-year-old pianist and artist has worked with her mom and created a site called BrailleAware.com. That's Braille-A-Ware.com. Actually, it's been around since 2006, selling t-shirts, hats, bags, jewelry, and more. But the unique factor here is that each has a slogan in both print and Braille. So I don't know about
very nice.
Someone well, wanting to read my t-shirt.
You know? Yeah, I was going to say, I want one that says, if you're reading this, you're a bit too personal with me right about now.
Yeah, baby. Looks like 7-128 Software has just published the winners of their top 25 websites for blind gamers. And they surveyed over 100 sites with relevant material for blind gaming. And they include free and commercial games, product reviews, help, documentation, forums, blogs, and other community features, as well as how current the content is and the popularity of these websites. So you can check that out at www.7128.com or get the direct link to the top 25 at serotalk.com. An article outlines 18 of the best sites for downloading audiobooks. I also mentioned there are some free ebooks for web designers, free ebooks for bloggers, as well as some free ebook reading applications. But quite a few interesting sites mentioned there. Ricky, I don't know if you've ever used any of those. Netfiction.com, TalkingHistory.org, ThoughtAudio.com, LearnOutLoud.com, and many more. You can get the complete list with a link over at Serotalk.com. Certainly a few I had never heard of before.
Yeah, I've never heard of a lot of these, but I'm all about getting more books. So I was very curious to read this article.
Well, speaking of getting more books, many people are getting much more of their news online now than ever before. Actually, 34%, or just over 1 in 3 people, have read some form of news online within the last 24 hours. 41% of people said they get most, if not all, of their news online. And 65% of people under 30 years of age, 18 to 29 demographic, 2 out of 3 people basically get their news online. Still number one, though, is, of course, television news. People like to have their pictures.
Yep.
But certainly it is an interesting trend. So it's made me wonder about radio reading services.
That's something that I hadn't considered.
Yeah, because I heard an interview, someone saying that some of them are actually digitizing now. If you listen to our interview with Solutions Radio, some of them now are getting newspaper content either in some kind of DAISY format and presenting it with synthetic speech so that people could review it at their convenience. So I'll be interested to learn more about that. And we will be at the IAAIS. That's the International Association of Audio Information Services. We'll be there May 12th and 14th, and we'll kind of give you an overview of what goes down there and what they're looking at for technologies for those of you who enjoy radio reading services. After 20 years, new ADA rules go into effect, and these cover everything from building design to what qualifies as a service animal. New ADA rules for the first time include things like swimming pools and parks, golf courses, boating facilities, exercise clubs, and other recreational facilities. Only trained dogs will be eligible to be used as service animals, and service dogs must help with issues directly relating to a person's disability and may not be used simply to offer emotional support.
Yeah, this is very interesting because they do say specifically service dogs, right? Not service animals.
Exactly. You heard our ATIA interview with a lady who is very competently using a guide horse. And so if this is saying that, you know, now they can say, no, you may not enter with your horse because it is not a dog. And it's something we mentioned earlier on the podcast. So we'll see how that comes out. But these rules also set standards for the use of wheelchairs and other mobility devices. They provide some specifics as far as selling seating for entertainment events in various venues. So those who are really interested in that can go read more about that at serotalk.com. And it sounds like there might be a topic for a future tech chat.
Indeed.
Yes, indeed. Well, a Braille prototype phone, a Braille phone, if you can imagine it, was shown at the TED conference and it featured an interactive touch responsive rubber display panel that would present text, video, and maps in graphic form, as well as Braille with raised lines and dots. This concept phone might show text messages in Braille, but take games like tic-tac-toe and show them with lines and X's and O's and all that cool stuff. But don't look for any immediate plans to see this phone in a store near you, because its future depends on a lot of things that simply aren't in place, including how to build the tactile surface for this interactive screen. So unless companies really sign on to it as a noble device, or we have to prove that we're a market, whatever the case may be, but he is going to try to proceed and see if we can come up with some real-world prototype for it.
One thing that you may see, though, in relation to Braille and phones is the Wear-a Braille. It's W-E-A-R-E Braille. And this is basically a pair of gloves that you can use to do Braille input. There are a few YouTube videos showing this in action. They so far just have a prototype. And in the YouTube videos, they're showing its use with an iPhone that hasn't been modified in any other way. And so you can wear these gloves and just sort of tap on a tabletop surface in order to either navigate your phone or do some Braille input. So that's pretty cool stuff.
And this wasn't the first time we've ever had a Braille phone. We've actually, for us old farts who've been around a long time, there was actually the MPO, which was an actual Braille display on a phone. It was bigger than a walkie-talkie, but this is wouldn't be the first time we've ever had a Braille phone before.
Of course, this is Braille and graphics, so right. I hope that some companies, organizations pursue this, because that kind of tactile UI is certainly something we all need.
In a few Sero talks ago, we actually talked about Microsoft and Surface and maybe Braille on a Surface, so it's certainly getting there. We are, each week, it seems like we're getting a different story that this technology is becoming more and more real.
Well, there was also Tactile World and Exhibit Booth 58 at CSUN that showed a kind of combination mouse that you could do Braille or tactile graphics on the screen that could allow blind people to play games and actually see where toolbars and underlined text and just a whole wealth of things on the screen. So for places where your screen reader may not speak, you might be able to actually get the graphics or even feel the printed letters. So that's a kind of a cool concept. I don't know how many of you play with Google Voice, but even another alternative that this article talks about is a service called Yap. This alternative to Google Voice is a free download for iPhone and Android devices. I don't know if it's accessible, so you go out there and check it out, folks, and let us know. But it works with AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, does free voicemail transcription, and they claim that anyone, that's a big claim, anyone can set this up in 2 minutes.
Wow. I wonder how it does with accents. I'm very curious about that.
Well, all of them have issues with accents, but it'll be very curious to see how well it, you know, if it's accessible for us to even configure it and make it do its thing. But we've got enough listeners that like to go out and play with that stuff. And if you do, hey, do a product review and send it to us. We'd love to include it. Love to have some voices other than ours in the podcast. But that's
yes,
what
indeed.
We have. Let's let you listen to at least some of what we thought were some of the highlight, at least based on conversation that took place at CSUN.
Thanks for listening. See you in a couple of weeks.
At CSUN 2011, this is Michael Loff, and we are at booth 102 at Ambitech. And so not only are we going to talk about canes and tips, but a new product you are launching this year. Let's talk about these new eyeglasses. Why do I want to wear these?
What they do is they provide protection to your upper body against overhanging tree limbs or signs or that kind of thing. So there's been a lot of people over the years who have been trying to develop a product like this, and generally they've been very expensive. So again, we wanted to meet four objectives. One was not to interfere with the vibrations coming up from your cane or the sensations coming from a guide dog. We wanted to make sure that it kept your free hand free. We wanted to make sure it didn't interfere with your hearing. And we wanted to make sure that it was affordable. And I think we've achieved all four of those.
So this is different from some of the other sonar technologies that actually pick up drop-offs and things ahead of you or off to the side. This is particularly upper body?
It's designed for upper body. What it does is it emits a 45-degree cone-shaped beam. So it will pick up objects slightly off to the side, slightly above and below. So it protects basically from the waist up. Yes, it could also be a pole that your cane doesn't pick up because you happen to be tapping on the other side where the pole isn't.
Right. So how much are these eyeglasses?
These eyeglasses retail for $120, which I believe is significantly below any other product out there like it.
What kind of alerts do you get?
The glasses we think that it's fairly good design. You activate the glasses by depressing a button on the right temple, and there's an audible beep when that goes on. and it's 1 to 4 beeps, and that indicates how fully charged the glasses are. The glasses use lithium-ion battery technology, so they have no memory on the batteries. And what it does is, when it picks up an object, it vibrates across the bridge of the glasses, and you can adjust the intensity of the vibration. And the range goes from approximately 3 meters to 0.7 of a meter. And the closer you get to an object, the more closely spaced the vibrations become.
Vibrating so I could help someone who's deafblind.
Yes. We have to thank RNIB. They really spec'd the product and told us what we had to come up with.
Yeah, now what's the battery life? How long will they last?
The battery will last for 10 hours of continuous vibration. So obviously, it'll last a full day because they would never be constantly vibrating for 10 hours.
Right, so is it rechargeable?
Yes, the recharge time is 2.5 hours. It can be from any standard charger in North America. The European version has a European charger. There's also a charger for the United Kingdom. And each charger you can unplug and it can be charged from any USB device.
Okay, and how much notice do you get that your battery is about to fail?
What you get is 10 consecutive beeps when the battery is low. Probably an hour's worth of battery life.
Okay, so that's ample time.
It's designed that you charge it overnight every night, because that's why it's lithium-ion, so that there's no memory. So even if the battery was 3/4 charged from the day before, you can fully charge it without affecting the life of the battery.
That's what a lot of people aren't used to, the lithium-ion. They're kind of conditioned to what's called the memory effect and letting the battery go all the way down.
Yes.
And bringing it back when that's really not necessary anymore with modern technology.
Yeah, and we wanted to make sure that no one was stuck out there with their glasses not functioning. So that way you charge it every night and it should function for the entire next day.
So what else are you showing here, your general fare of products here?
Well,
you have canes and tips and holsters and what else do you...
Yeah, Ambutech is famous, I guess, for its aluminum fiberglass and graphite canes, as well as we probably have the biggest variety of tips on the market. The rolling ball tips, the pencil tips, the marshmallow tips. We have a ceramic tip, essentially the same coating as the tiles on the space shuttle. So it's an extremely long wearing tip. One of the products we do have is the Nightwalker tip. It's a tip designed to illuminate at night and to make sure that the blind person is seen by others. So it's a tip that's activated only when it's dark and only when it's in motion. You can leave it on, and as long as it's in the daylight or stationary, it won't function and it won't wear down the battery. I think, we have literally hundreds of products, so your best bet is probably
just
to go
to
on
a website.
Right? www.ambutech.com.
Perhaps a better question is, what are some things we should keep in mind when choosing? I know it's hard sometimes sight unseen, and there's different theories about the length of your cane depending upon how fast you walk or how you stride, and some folks feel it should be longer, and some feel it should be right here at the sternum. And so what tips do you give people in choosing a cane that's going to be best for them?
We generally ask them to talk to an O&M instructor. We are not orientation and mobility experts. We get a lot of our input from those people. So we tend to say they're the experts, they're the ones who have the training, please contact them. We can give some general advice in, as you say, the sternum or the armpit. I'm going to drag you back to one of the other products. We've come out with an adaptive mobility device, which is used for training people in the use of a long cane. And we also have a tandem bar that's new that you can hook two canes together so an instructor can help their student with the technique.
Learn the proper technique. Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Those are two other new products that we've launched.
And how much are those?
I would have to...
Okay, no problem there. But so explain a little bit more about the first product you mentioned there. I'm trying to understand what it does.
AMD?
Yes.
Basically, it's a rectangle. There's a lot of them on the market. A lot of them are homemade. Ours folds down so that it can be transported with relative ease. But what it is, because it's a rectangle, people who may have other disabilities so that they can't get the technique for using a straight cane, what it does is it rolls in front of you and it will pick up dips, it will pick up drop-offs, basically the same as a long cane, but it's for people with multiple disabilities. Some O&Ms are actually recommending it over a white cane because it's a little more bulky, but it does provide more information because it's about 20 inches wide.
And how much does it weigh?
That's a very good question.
But I just wonder if they have multiple disabilities, if they had any impairments to their hands itself.
It's intended to roll on the cement, so you're not lifting it and moving it from side to side.
I know if it would it get caught in anything and cracks in the cement, or is it just...
Well, it's available with two wheels. One is an indoor wheel, which is relatively small, and the other is based on our Rover Tip, which is a 3-inch foam wheel. So there's not much that a 3-inch foam wheel will get stuck on.
Again, what's the website?
The website is www.ambutech.com.
A-M-B-U-T-E-C-H?
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Gordon, thanks for taking a few minutes, and folks, certainly check out these new eyeglasses. What do they call if someone wants to look them up?
You can just type in eyeglasses, and that's small I, capital G, and then L-A-S-S-E-S.
Okay, eyeglasses, just eye and the word glasses. Very good. Yes. Check it out, folks, at CSUN 2011. This is Michael Loft for Serotalk.
Welcome to another BlindBargains.com exclusive audio podcast brought to you by the AT Guys, your assistive technology experts. Visit ATGuys.com today for all your technology needs. Now, here's J.J. Meadow.
We're with Larry Skupkon again, the technology project leader. Did I get that right?
Yep, that's close. That's it.
Close enough. for APH, and... we're here to talk today a little bit about AVI Nav, a new GPS portion of the Orion Note Taker. Larry, welcome back to Blind Bargains.
Well, thank you, JJ. Good to be here.
So we saw a very tiny glimpse of what this might be, I think, a couple months ago from the annual report. I see that you've taken the Wayfinder GPS code, you're working with that. So why don't you tell us what you've been doing?
Right, and in fact, we had a small demonstration of it in a session the other day. It's were you able to make it to that?
I've been busy in here.
Sure. So yeah, basically, we've got big plans for this thing, but when we initially release it, it's going to be a pretty basic GPS system, pretty much like Wayfinder was, where you can get points of interest, navigation. Look around, where am I, so forth. Eventually, though, and the thing we like about it being server-based, and I believe we mentioned this in the annual report, we want to expand this out to be sort of the social networking equivalent of GPS, so that if you're going down the street and, there's a tree across the sidewalk, you can, well, if you want, you can take a picture of the tree, and you can record the fact that there's a tree there or write it down, and then as other people that are using this application come up to it, you know, as you're approaching, hey, whatever JJ recorded before, there's a tree in the sidewalk. And wow. A better route might be to, go back to the end of the block and take a right and go around or whatever.
So I assume those recordings, they would probably be date tagged somehow so you could see if someone recorded there's a tree in the sidewalk, but it was from 6 months ago, might not be as accurate as...
Right. And we're going to work in mechanisms for verifying and, if nobody has done anything with it, to let them expire or let people update them to say, oh, the tree's gone. And, this can go away now.
Sure. And it's going to depend on the type of landmark, whether it's a permanent thing or something that's temporary.
Right. Oh, absolutely, yeah. Okay. In fact, one of the things we want to do is incorporate the Discover Cities map data into this, which has got a lot of pedestrian-centric information with it, and also to incorporate municipality-type information, like a lot of cities have databases of where all the fire plugs or all the mailboxes or all the streetlights in the city are.
Right.
We'd eventually like to incorporate all that kind of information into it, too.
So it's really a melding of information from various resources.
Absolutely, yeah.
To create a more advanced GPS system.
And then in phase three, which is probably, 2-3 years out or more, we want to bring You know, and when the technology matures enough, we want to bring this into the indoors as well.
Mm-hmm. If you looked at, I know there's some apps out there for iPhone, Android, you know, for instance, getting around shopping malls, or there's, Meijer in Michigan has an app where they'll tell you which aisle of something is in the store.
Yeah, yeah, we have looked at that. That's some fascinating stuff. There's a couple companies doing that. In fact, Nokia is here at this conference with a... talking about a Bluetooth triangulation instead of using Wi-Fi triangulation, but it's even quite a bit more accurate for finding, you know, exactly where you are in space. There's also some technologies that let you combine, say, that kind of triangulation, whether it be cell towers, Wi-Fi, or Bluetooth, with a video image of where you are to kind of precisely line you up. But of course, that takes somebody going through there ahead of time and scanning it. But those are all possibilities. We're actually not quite ready to get into all that yet. We want to get the basics in first, and then some virtual navigation, which isn't going to be in this initial release either. You know, so sort of the ability to, very much like Intersection Explorer or
the PC maps.
Yep.
Okay.
So that's kind of where we're going with it.
So for people who use Wi-Fi in the past on the Nokia phones, have you kept the interface? Are you totally redoing it? Or?
Well, actually, the Wayfinder that people have been using has been running on Symbian. This is an Android client.
Okay.
So now what we've had is people ask us, can they subscribe to our servers with their Symbian client? And that's not something that we had actually considered in the beginning, but it sure is a possibility. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure if there'd have to be some re-engineering with the original.
I don't think so. I think the as far as the server side goes, you know, the old client will still talk to it.
Yeah, that's a pretty intriguing, especially now considering that those people would basically have a free GPS program because they got refunds if they applied for them. So.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. So they would have to. They'd have to subscribe to this again, though.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's an Android-based product. Is it going to be available for people in the market, or is this going to work with the Orion, or what are you thinking on that?
Well, initially, we're going to release it with the Orion when it comes out this summer. Actually, the Orion is the Level Star name for it. Ours is still the Braille Plus.
Okay.
So maybe we should call it the Braille Plus Orion or something, just to keep things a little
straight. So this is like the, it's essentially the second generation of the Braille Plus.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Want to build on all the good stuff we started there.
Right.
Sort of move to the next generation.
Okay. Is this a possibility in the future for people using maybe mobile accessibility or whatever else comes out in future for Android for them to be able to get this? Or?
There is a possibility, yeah. That's not our priority right now. I mean, we're doing everything we can just to make our product release date. So, other things like that are possibilities. We've discussed them.
Okay. So the Braille Plus 2 or whatever, for people who have current Braille Plus, is there going to be any sort of upgrade path for them? Or?
Well, no, there isn't.
Different
program. You saw the model here. It's not the same hardware at all, or software for that matter. We're trying to port some of the software that was in it, and we'll definitely have the functionality that was in the old one, you know, plus a lot more, obviously.
Sure. Yeah, where is that? It was sitting around here somewhere. It's an interesting little, it's tiny as far as the prototype. You basically have room for the six keys. There's also an entire numeric pad worked in there.
Plus your navigation, and then also your standard Android home, back, search, and a menu also.
Right.
Plus we've got two additional keys, which will be a dial key and a speak key.
Okay.
So the standard for Android, and then the two extra ones.
Speak for voice recognition?
Actually, it'll be for both, for voice recognition and for, screen reader-type functions to repeat something or maybe to get your time announced to you or other things.
Okay. Is there a camera on the prototype?
Well, this is just a model.
Well, you can't press any buttons on this thing. It's a hard show.
I can't really talk about anything else, but that's a great question.
Right.
Ask me again in a couple months.
Right, okay. So you're looking towards summer release date for this at probably about the same time that Level Star, you guys are going to release it in tandem,
Yeah, uh-huh.
Do you have a? Is that basically what you're saying? Is sometime this summer?
Right. Uh-huh. Exactly.
Do you have a price yet?
No, we don't. Low. We're going to try to keep it as low as possible. And it'll be a good deal.
Do you think, so you guys obviously have subscribed to the belief that the future of note takers is Android-based. What made you land on Android?
Well, we obviously couldn't go with Apple because, you know, their hardware is their hardware. And, mm-hmm. I don't see them doing a Braille keyboard on a phone. And, you know, touchscreen is great. Apple's got a great interface for the touchscreen. But, when you want to do some texting, at least me, it's just not a satisfying or productive way to do it. A Braille keyboard is really, you know, to do some writing, texting, email, or just writing a book.
Right.
A Braille keyboard is a much better experience. And with this time, we have finally learned. We've got the absolute world-class quality keys on this thing this time, too.
Right.
So I know the original Braille Plus, the keys were a little wobbly. These are going to be a double scissor action type key that is going to feel good tactily.
Right. And there's two models, one with a Braille display, one without?
Right.
Okay. Both available at the same time this summer, basically?
Actually, the Braille one's going to come out first, and then the model that you looked at there will be follow up about a month later.
All right. If people want to get more information, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more coming out. How can they get updates and watch the progress of this?
I would suggest joining the Icon email list where we talk about the Icon and the Braille Plus. That's where we're releasing our press releases.
Okay. All right. Well, great. Thank you so much, Larry.
Oh, sure, JJ.
This has been another exclusive audio podcast from Blind Bargains. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest technology deals, news, and interviews. So long.
At CSUN 2011, this is Michael Off, and we are here at the booth for LookTel. You may have heard of it. A new, very exciting product, reading currency on iOS devices, right? It's all of them, right? The iPhone 4 and 3GS?
iPhone 3GS, iPhone 4, iPod Touch, fourth generation, and now iPad 2 since it's been released with a camera on it.
Very exciting. This is $1.99 is the price of it. Many of us have already purchased it, and a great investment. It reads in like under 3 seconds. I think it's also exciting is, how does this work? This actually has a continuous video, so you could actually take a stack of money and just keep grabbing a bill and putting it on the bottom and go through all of your currency pretty quickly, right?
Exactly. So it's recognizing in real time. So as soon as the camera sees and focuses on the bill, it'll tell you exactly what it is. It'll pronounce the denomination. It'll also write the denomination across the screen. And so you can put a 20 in it, it'll just say $20, then change it to a 5, it'll say $5. You're not taking any images, you're not pressing any buttons, it just does it. And the recognition usually happens in quite a bit less than a second. It's almost instant. On the iPhone 4 also, it'll turn on the flash in the back to use as a flashlight if you're in a dark environment. So you'll be able to recognize currency, you know, with the lights off or at night.
But as exciting as that is, you're not finished there. You're working on some other projects as well. Is that correct?
Right. So, you know, we're just dipping our toes into water with Money Reader. The same technology that's powering the Money Reader, the object recognition technology, will be applying towards recognizing all kinds of consumer goods. So, you know, you'll be able to recognize anything that's in your pantry, your cereal boxes, canned goods, spices. You know, you go into your refrigerator and you'll be able to recognize your sodas, your beer bottles, wine bottles. And then you can go into your family room, you know, watch a DVD, and you can look through your DVD collection simply by waving the phone over all your DVDs until it announces the one you want to see. You're not pressing any buttons, it just, as soon as it sees it, it'll tell you what it is. So, you know, you get to Lion King, and it'll say Lion King. There's the, you know, DVD you wanted to watch, you pull it out, put it in the DVD player, and watch it. It'll recognize book covers, all kinds of things.
How many products is it going to communicate with a central database? How is that going to work?
So there's different ways we can set this up. The plan is to have multiple databases so that we can keep this local on your phone. That way you don't have to have an internet connection. So, you know, we can set up anything from a spices database, so you're specifically just in a spices database and will only recognize spices, or you can set up, you know, a kitchen database so that you can recognize anything that's in the kitchen. So, you know, you're going to be, you know, cooking dinner, you walk in the kitchen, just open the app, switch to kitchen database, press a button, and then anything that's in your kitchen should be recognized by the application, any spices, canned goods, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, different databases will correspond to different locations, either within your house or at the office or specific uses.
Do you have a time frame on release on this? Or
We don't have a time frame, nothing public, but we'll work on it to get out there as soon as possible.
Now, you said you were looking for input for LookTel here, the money identifier, and one of the things that someone had mentioned was the ability for vibration, I guess, to help a person who's deaf-blind, maybe.
Right, so we've had a ton of input and a ton of feedback coming through Twitter, through, you know, people are emailing us directly. We're monitoring the communities, you know, Google communities and the other communities, and we've been listening to some of the podcasts, and that's definitely something that a lot of people have been asking for. That'll be our first update. We'll include the vibration identification mode. And then in future updates beyond that, we're actually going to add some foreign currency. A lot of people have been emailing us from Canada, from the UK, from Europe, asking for their currencies to be added. And those will be future updates to the software after the vibration.
Now, you have a necessary disclaimer that not to use it with counterfeit currency. I'm curious, how easy would it be for counterfeit currency to trick it?
It's very easy. So I actually have, you know, an image of a bill in a binder on the table over here that I can show you. It'll recognize it. So the way this works is it essentially creates a map of unique points of an image. And once it sees that map, it says what that is. So an image of the actual item is still going to have the same exact label or, in this case, a bill on it, so it'll just recognize it. That's the downside. So, yeah, you might have a counterfeit bill in your hand and it'll recognize it. The upside is that that's what makes this capable of folding the bill into, you know, a quarter, and it'll still recognize it. That the technology drives that, so you don't have to have, you know, a flat bill and anything like that. So, you know, it's a trade-off. But, you know, we wanted to kind of let everyone know that this isn't going to discriminate between a counterfeit bill or a real one.
So people will still need to be mindful of the texture of the notes and things of that sort.
Sure, yeah.
And one of the biggest benefits to this is if we come out with new currency, you can easily update the database for it, right?
Exactly. So when new currency is released, and I was just speaking to a lady from the Treasury who says that there will be a new currency coming pretty soon. And she actually offered to send us versions of those currency before release so that we can have that ready for update before that even comes out. So we'll be ready for that when that happens, and there'll be an update pushed to your phone probably before or when that new currency is released.
Right. So $1.99, it seems like it'd be hard to get rich off that, but hopefully a few thousand people will adopt the technology. Have you set a price model yet for your barcode system that you're going to come out with?
Well, it's not a barcode system. It's actually recognized the item, so you have to find the barcode. It just points it at the item. But to answer your question,
so is it looking at labels or pictures, or what does it mean? Is it using to identify?
It's looking at, you know, let's say Coca-Cola bottle. They have the label, the Coca-Cola label on the bottle, and all you have to do is point the device at that. It sees it and knows exactly what it is. It'll tell you Coca-Cola. And a canned good, it has the label with whatever it is. It just sees that. So you can point it essentially anywhere that the label is on the item. You don't have to go looking and hunting for the barcode.
Wow, so that's actually much more advanced, a form of, I don't know if I want to say crowdsourcing, but certainly where someone has identified these images of the products. Like you said, it's not just the barcode, it's the Lion King DVD, and it knows that.
Right, so as long as it sees the DVD cover, it knows what it is. You'll be able to identify the front or the back of it, it just, that's the whole point of this, is making these things a lot easier than, you know, having to find a barcode, take an image of it. Well, now we have real-time barcodes, barcode scanners, but the point still stands. You just point it at the item, and it'll tell you what it is. We actually have a demonstration of that with different items, not just currency, on the website. If you go to looktel.com/demo, there's two demo videos, one Looktel and then one of the prototype of the object recognition running and the different scenarios, including landmarks, actually recognizing buildings, not just items.
Wow, so you could actually turn this thing on, and if a really market was covered, you could actually use it as a travel point of interest device.
Exactly. And, you know, in the future, we'll have ways to add items or places to the database yourself through, you know, an easy-to-use interface. So you can, you know, set up your office into the system so you know if you're walking, here's the front door. If you're traveling at a hotel, you might be able to add your hotel room into the database so that you can just walk down the hall and just point your phone to the side of the hall that your hotel is on.
Anybody would see the room number, the little plastic with the room number or something?
Yeah, I mean, there's different, you know, types of room numbers, and once you put it into the database, ideally the room number will work. If the room number is too bland for the system to work, we'd actually provide, you know, specific tags, decals that you can just put on the door, and that would bring it up. And so as soon as you're walking by it, bam, there's my room. And your phone will just tell you. You don't have to press anything. You're not, you know, doing anything like that.
What would the cost be for these tags? Someone to go identify, you know, label of an exhibit like this that we're in, or like you said, just a hotel, an incoming convention, or a school, or something like that. What's the pricing for that?
So we don't have pricing for any of these future apps yet. I think, you know, just keep monitoring what we're doing. The whole point of working on iPhone and devices is not only to make use of existing hardware, but that makes this a lot cheaper for us to develop. We don't have to develop our hardware. We just, you know, have the software that you download onto your existing hardware, and that brings our costs down significantly. We also want to make this as accessible as possible to, you know, to help people. So the goal is to make this as affordable as possible for the market, and we're hoping to be able to really satisfy people with the price point. But beyond that, we don't have anything to say yet.
I think some will ask, would you look at the Android operating system, or are you strictly staying in iOS right now?
At this time, we're strictly on iOS, and we've talked to a lot of users, and we have advisors that are specifically advising on sticking with iPhone, and that's because of VoiceOver, which has been a great accessibility feature. Android just isn't up to par at this time. We do actually have this technology working on Android internally at the office, so, you know, we could build that and port that to Android at any time if we wanted to. But as far as we know at this time, the market just isn't there.
Well, very good point. I neglected to ask you your name. What is your name, sir?
My name is Eyal Benstock. That's E-Y-A-L.
Eyal Benstock. Okay, well, I thank you for taking a few minutes to explain this. Check it out, folks, at looktel.com. And, of course, demos of the Money Reader and their forthcoming, what are you calling it, product identifier?
We don't have names yet.
Oh, they don't have the proper name for it.
It'll be object recognition. We have a name. I'll tweet you and let you know what it is.
Oh, very good. So looktel.com/demo. Check it out, folks. And it's well worth every penny and much more for the $1.99 to read your currency. It already took my device I spent $99 on last year and pretty much made it obsolete. So this is great. This is mainstream technology, lowering the price for all of us. This is what we're working for, folks. So thanks a lot. And we are coming to you from CSUN 2011 in San Diego. This is Michael Law for Serotalk.
We're here with Karina Pickard, president of Six Dot Innovations, and we weren't even expecting to see this at CSUN 11, but we have found the Six Dot Braille label that we've talked about quite a bit on Blind Bargains. Welcome to Blind Bargains.
Thank you so much. I can do a little demo of the labeler for you if you'd like.
Sure.
The labeler runs on 4 AA batteries, so it's a battery-operated dymo tape labeler using the standard Braille keyboard. So you can write, grade 1 Braille or with the contractions, however you'd like. And just as you type on the device, the Braille comes out right away. So, Josh, would you like to give it a try?
Oh, you want me to? Or?
Sure, sure. So I just hooked it on. Okay. You can type whatever you'd like.
Oh, let's see. We're going to do visit www.attuys.com.
Right, so you'll see that if you feel towards the back here, the Braille is
coming out.
So it catches up with you. It stores your key presses in a buffer and then embosses it at the speed it can.
Okay, so it's doing probably a character every 2-3 seconds.
Every second, yeah, thereabouts.
And then there comes visit www.
It's very crisp rail.
Thank you. So that's one of the things that we can do by having it be battery powered is we can control that the rail is very crisp and clear, and that's something that we want to always have as part of our product.
So I typed way ahead, and obviously it has some sort of a buffer.
It sure does. It's called a FIFO, first in, first out buffer.
Okay.
So this, again, is just a prototype unit. We'll be releasing the first 500 as soon as we get them built, and so we're taking pre-orders for those. And those first 500 may have actually audio built in, so you may type the entire label, confirm that it's exactly what you want it to be before printing it out to make sure it's typo-free.
Okay. Now that is what I want, so what do I do now?
So then you just push down this little lever, yep, just like that, and now you can pull out your label.
Oh, and it already cut it, and
it's all cut and everything.
There's a tab on the end?
Yeah, it sure is.
And there you go.
Okay.
So one of the advantages of the 6-dot is you're not limited to looking at the other Braille Daimler labelers. You have so many characters on the wheel, and you can only type in certain characters. A lot of the punctuation isn't there.
Right. So you get all the characters, fewer mistakes. It's a lot faster. You can type just about as fast as you want, unlike with that Daimler labeler.
Sure. So is there the key? Is this basically the 6 dot keys and a space bar
That's
on
right.
the top?
It's an on-off switch just towards the front.
Okay, yep, just a regular, yep.
It's a little regular switch, and there are slots there for a carrying strap. But the final production unit will probably come with a case that has a strap built in.
Got you. And then that lever in the back is to cut the tape. The tape comes out of the back, kind of coming out of the left side.
Sure, and then there's the door for loading the tape just here. And you just pop the roll of tape in really easily, any sort of tape you can find.
So it works with whatever. Basically, the tape that you would use in the Daimler labeler goes in there.
Exactly the same one.
So very low cost for getting the tape. You get it for a dollar or two a roll.
Exactly.
At the store.
Sure thing.
So you're taking pre-orders now.
We sure are. On our website, braillelabeler.net, you can just click that pre-order link, and we'll take a $50 deposit. It's fully refundable if you choose to not buy the labeler at the time that we're shipping them, but that'll hold your spot to be one of those first 500 to receive the labeler.
So is there a price yet?
We're not settled on a price just yet. It'll be in the $300 range, but we will notify all the customers who pre-order as soon as the price is set in stone.
Right, and then they'll have the opportunity to go forward or not.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, great. Yep. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, Jason. It's been a pleasure.
At CSUN 2011, this is Michael Off, and I caught up with J.J. Minow of blindbargains.com, atguys.com, recently released androidaccess.net. And you just made a major announcement here today about something you've launched to update your bcscan.com website.
Yes, we did. We're very proud of this. We've been working for the last few months. Ever since Directions for Me, a great service from Horizons for the Blind, was released. Directions for Me is a service, if you're not familiar, that provides product information for now over 362,000 products, everything from frozen foods to canned goods to non-prescription medications, things like that. And there certainly was a logical tie-in that we wanted to explore, since we on BC Scan have a barcode scanner where you can scan items and we retrieve as much information as we can find. So we're delighted to announce today that we have partnered with Horizons for the Blind, and Directions for Me data is now available when scanning items on BCScan.
Folks like myself who have an actual scanner now and they go to bcscan.com will get more than just the name of the product. We will get all of the directions that will be in the database for directions.me.
Yeah, for Directions for Me, absolutely. Before, we had directions for some things, things that we submitted, things that users submitted here and there, and maybe a few thousand products. But now, if you scan a product, it's completely integrated. It will basically say, oh, we found this product from Directions for Me. Here are the directions, the ingredients, the other product information. And then there's also a link directly to the Directions for Me site in case you want to find out even more, like the nutritional information and things like that. We link straight to the website. It's on the website. It will soon be integrated into our WindowEyes app. We're also working at apps for other screen readers and platforms as well.
Wow. So that, even the WindowEyes module. Of course, they released 7.5 yesterday. We also heard here LookTel, of course, with the money identifier for iOS, and now they're coming out with something that will do based on not only barcodes, but actual images. So if you put the Lion King DVD, it'll see that image and tell you it's Lion King DVD. So really changing. This is making things much more affordable, much more accessible. Might hurt the bottom line of some companies that have some good products, but a little high in price. Of course, this being an online portal, these things are happening daily.
Absolutely.
Updates.
It's all about access to information. We've always been of the belief with AT Guides, and something we share with Horizons for the Blind. We share the philosophy that information should be free, and that access to information should be as affordable as possible. So, you know, you can go to directionsforme.org and search for product information. If you have a barcode scanner, you can go to BC Scan or the Directions for Me website. Either one, scan the barcode and get that information. And like you said, it's always being updated. Three or four times a week, Directions for Me is adding new products to their database from their suppliers. We're also hooked into on BC Scan. We're directly hooked into Amazon, into their system for retrieving information. We're hooked into ISBNDB.com, which is a database of over 5 million books. If you scan a CD, we'll retrieve the CD track titles, all the songs that are on the CD, and display that. So we're continually expanding the information that's available, and always looking for ideas for ways to expand it. Barcodes are very powerful, and we're just trying to harness that technology as much as possible and bring the information together.
Wow, it's a very exciting time. And also, you've just launched AndroidAccess.net. We talked about it in Tech Chat 93, but give our listeners an overview of what you're doing with that site.
Sure. Android Access is basically a portal that gives information on applications that are accessible for the Android platform. There's been a lot of improvements lately, both with the built-in Google accessibility and with other third-party solutions such as Code Factory's mobile accessibility. And we felt it was a good time to kind of compile a lot of that information into one place. We started out with information on apps. We're almost up to 100 now, being launched for a week and a half. We're going to expand very soon to also have information on phones, have how-to guides for how to accomplish various things, and other user comments and things like that. So we're certainly expanding. We want to become the one-stop portal for accessible Android information, and I think we're on our way to accomplishing that goal.
Yeah, I just spoke with Laura Weiss, and she sold me one called CamCard, where you basically scan or take a picture of your business card and automatically imports it as a contact. Or you can look at it first and then import it as a contact. That's kind of a neat.
And that's the amazing thing. There's so many apps out there, and nobody knows about all of them. So we try to just find as many as possible. You know, I've already learned about 10 or 20 new apps that I had no idea existed because other users submitted them. So it's really cool to watch the database grow. And it's just fascinating to see all the available apps for all the mobile platforms that are out there.
Code Factory today released their Mobile Speak 5.0 for Symbian 3 phones. So are you selling anything in that space over at atguys.com?
Yep, we still have Mobile Speak available. If you had a version 4 of Mobile Speak, it's a free upgrade. If you had version 3 or earlier, the upgrade is still available. And that is available for both Symbian. Windows Mobile is still available if you want to get one of those phones as well. And that's available for $275. It's supporting all the latest Symbian devices.
We appreciate all the innovations you have going on over there. And, of course, also great interviews at blindbargains.com. Who have you spoken with here, and what has impressed you at the event thus far?
Well, I mean, definitely interested to see what happens with the Orion and some of the development of the note takers. Lots of mobile apps. The Looktel app, of course, is very impressive, and I'm interested to see where that goes. Learned that the Zoom Reader iPhone app is headed to the App Store, and so it should be up in the next week or so. The 6-dot Braille labeler is something we've been talking about for a couple years in a prototype, and they are now taking pre-orders. Got a chance to see one of them, and it's a nifty little device, especially if you make a lot of Braille labels. The Braille is very crisp, and it's a pretty cool thing to see, of course. New version of WindowEyes as well is out. Dolphin is actually doing a lot of upgrading. I think sometimes we forget about them, but they seem to be doing a lot with their products as well.
Now, who's making the 6-dot Braille labeler?
6-dot is the name of the company, actually. Okay. It's a brand new company, and it's very crisp Braille. They're taking pre-orders now. You put out on a $50 deposit. It's going to be about $299, somewhere around there for the actual product. When it comes out, when the price is announced, you can get a $50, you get your money refunded if you don't want it. So they're taking pre-orders for the first 500 right now.
Well, thanks a lot for all your valuable insight. And, of course, we encourage folks to go to blindbargains.com. And, of course, you can also go under the podcast under iBlink Radio and see all of your great contributions. And maybe with your permission, I've made a new category right on the front page right now called 2011 CSUN.
Awesome.
We can link to those and tag them as Blind Bargains and put every CSUN interview in one place. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Thank
well,
you
we
so
will
much.
Do that. Thanks, buddy.
All right.
At CSUN 2011 for Serotalk, this is Michael Loff. What mechanisms are they looking at in making notes more detectable, recognizable to the blind and low vision? I once heard they were considering a program of actually giving blind persons a money identifier, an actual tool to read the currency, talk of markings. What, if anything, is being done on that front?
I'm actually the project leader for development of a tactile element that we're going to add to our currency, which will assist the blind to denominate. And part of our program is that it's a multi-pronged approach, because we realize that there are even some blind people who have neuropathy as a result of diabetes and don't have a very keen sense of touch. And so we are also offering a coupon, at least we expect it to be a coupon, that will be redeemable for a currency denominator. We're trying a multifaceted approach to this situation so that a tactile feature be incorporated, as well as offering some kind of denominating device for people as well.
Right. Well, we have the iBill that came out last year, but our concern is we cannot upgrade the firmware, so if the notes change, maybe it won't work anymore. And now something recently called LookTel, but they put the disclaimer on that they cannot guarantee that it will, I say, don't use it to read counterfeit currency. What kind of device do you think it'll be? What's the spec, you think, of a device that we would use to actually read the currency?
Yeah, Michael, that's something that I can't really speculate on, and that's why we're leaning more toward a coupon program, similar to what was used by the FCC when they converted from analog to digital.
Right, the HDTV receiver tuners, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, and that way you could choose from a variety of different vendors.
Exactly,
okay.
Exactly, because we don't want to try to mandate what is the best for an individual, because there's so many different categories that, you know, of people that have different needs, and so we figure that offering some kind of a coupon that can be redeemed may be the best way to satisfy most people.
Do you have a website if folks want to just kind of learn more about the whole process and what you do?
We sure do. I'd like to invite your listeners to go on the web to www.moneyfactory.gov, and it tells all about the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, and one of the links there is for meaningful access, and that'll give you some information on this project.
Broadcasting from CSUN 2011, for Cerro Talk, this is Michael Off. At CSUN 2011, this is Michael Off, and I caught up with Caroline in person here from Code Factory. Of course, we spoke pretty recently. You should listen to Tech Chat 93. We talked about your mobile accessibility for Android, but you also come out with a new product for Symbian, right? You have the...
Yeah. Hello, Michael. That's a pleasure to meet you in person.
Yes, always nice to meet in person.
So, yeah, we just released today the new version of Mobile Speak for Symbian, the version 5.0. The main highlight is support for Symbian 3, so it supports the Nokia E7, which is a very professional-oriented phone with a very nice QWERTY keyboard, but also the Nokia N8, the C7, and the C6. And there's a new very nice feature, which is a review cursor mode, so that you can actually move through all the elements of the screen with the focus of Mobile Speak, even the soft keys and the title of the window. So that's, we're very happy to have released this new version. One of the other big highlights is that it supports the latest Nokia email, let's say, that was not supported on previous phone, and that's a big improvement. You can go through the inbox, and if a message is not read, it's going to tell you unread message. If you open the message, you can use all the reading comments of Mobile Speak, and you can navigate through the email per word, per sentence, per paragraph. So that's been a very big development effort that we made, but now the Nokia email application is very, very fully compatible with Mobile Speak, and we're very happy with that.
Does this support any of these phones you mentioned, are they use a touch screen?
Actually, all the Nokia Symbian 3 have a touch screen. The Nokia E7 is the only one with a physical QWERTY keyboard, but they all have a touch screen, and quite big touch screen. They're very nice and very sensitive. It seems that Nokia doesn't release any more non-touchscreen phone. I think the last one which been released was the Nokia C5 1 year ago in March 2010, and since then, only touchscreen.
So you feel comfortable you can do everything on the touchscreen, or would you lean people toward the E7 for the QWERTY keyboard?
You can do everything with the touchscreen, and it is actually very intuitive with Mobile Speak, because we have those two virtual touch modes, which is the keypad mode and the joystick mode. And with the keypad mode, what we do is that we create virtually a keypad touchscreen. On the screen, it is divided 12 virtual keys. On the top, you have 1, 2, 3, underneath 4, 5, 6, underneath 7, 8, 9, and then asterisk 0 and Ash. And if you want to write to input text, which is one of the most challenging thing to do for our users, you go, for example, you triple tap on the virtual key 2, which is at the top of the screen at the middle, and it's going to be A, B, C. So if you are a traditional user of a Symbian phone with a physical keypad, you would actually do exactly the same with the touchscreen, but in a virtual way. So you can really do everything with the touchscreen. The thing that we noticed with some of the new Symbian 3 devices is that they have less and less keys, obviously, apart from the E7, but you don't have a dial key and a hang up key, for example. So that was another challenge, but we create new gestures, very easy to hang up and answer a call. So you can do everything with a touchscreen. Now, it is true that if you want to write a lot, for everyone, it's always a bit easier to write with a physical keyboard, but it's not an obligation.
Okay, are there any benefits to those of us who maybe have something older like an N82 or N86, or these enhancements to 5.0 pretty much for the Symbian 3?
The improvements are also for previous version of the Nokia devices, like the Nokia email, which was not supported on many of the latest devices, and also the review cursor mode, which is also available for all the devices.
I definitely want to get to, even though it's not out yet, your TV Speak.
Yeah, TV Speak is a great product. It's not yet launched. We're still working on making the ASTC TV protocol, which is the US TV protocol, compatible with TV Speak. But that's an application that you actually install on a PC, and you have to plug with a USB TV tuner to get the TV signal to your computer, and then you can control your TV in a very, very accessible way. You can move, obviously, from one channel to another, but you can look at the EPG, the guide program. You can know which program is currently on. You can look for the next program, and it's really an easy way to control your TV. First release it in Spain. We designed the product in collaboration with ONCE, the Spanish Association for the Blind, and it is available in France and in Germany, and very soon in the U.S.
Very soon, okay. Do we know the price point for it?
We don't know yet. We first try to get the version stabilized as much as we can, and then we will release the price point.
With any of these, you'll have to work with particular TV devices like USB. Avermedia was one. Hopage, I think, were two companies I saw mentioned on your website. So people have to make sure it matches. They have hardware to go along with it.
Yeah, it should actually work with all the USB TV tuner, but we didn't try all the devices that are available on the market. The one which are more responsive are definitely the one from Avermedia and Opage, but it should work with any devices. The important thing is that you need a Windows PC.
So just briefly mention for anyone who maybe hasn't listened to Tech Chat 93, we encourage you to do so. We spoke for a whole 90 minutes talking about your mobile accessibility for Android.
We just released mobile accessibility for Android. This is two products in one. On one side, it is a suite of 10 accessible applications. SMS, contact, email, web, phone, etc. So that we design a special user interface, and all the visual information is spoken by the Nuance Vocalizer voice synthesis. And if you get outside of the suite, you still have a screen reader component that we created, so you can still navigate the Android standard interface. But everything inside the suite, it's much more accessible because it depends on our own accessible framework. And for example, you have touchscreen support. You can just explore the screen with your finger, and mobile accessibility will tell you what is under. Then you double tap and you activate the element, for example.
Thank you very much, Caroline.
Thank you, Michael.
Live from CSUN 2011. In San Diego for CeroTalk, this is Michael Off.
We're here with Rick Younger, Operations Manager for CeroTech, and we are playing with DocuScan Plus.
Yay! Not only are we playing with DocuScan Plus, but we are playing with the HoverCam, which is working with DocuScan Plus. I'm just going to...
Sure. Go ahead and describe it, and welcome to Blind Bargains and all that.
Very cool. So this camera is a very long sort of cylindrical camera. If you pick it up, it feels very light in the hand. You're able
it's
to...
It's a very smooth surface.
Yes, yes. And you're able to pull up on the camera. So it's a sort of telescoping camera. You pull up and then you fold out the extending arm of the camera, which then focuses down on the page that you're looking at.
Sure. By comparison, I think, to some of the other cameras that are out there, would you say maybe this one's a little more sturdy? It seems pretty well built.
I like the way that it's built because there's a very nice solid base. So there aren't quite as many moving parts. You're not unfolding legs and things like that. You just have this single solid base. You pull up on a part of the camera, you unfold it, and there you go.
So, what does it weigh?
I don't know. It feels like it weighs probably about, between 8 and 10 ounces.
Okay. All right. So you have it extended and pulled it out here.
So you got it pulled out. With the camera comes a mat that has some tactile markings. There's one set of sort of curved tactile markings that show the best placement for the camera so that it is focusing on the biggest possible area to place a page.
There's little lines and etchings that you can feel, and you'd place the page in between, I take it?
Yes,
the
exactly.
The corners that you can feel?
There are two sort of L-shaped, there's an L and then a sort of opposite facing L that you can place the two corners of the page in to get the, just sort of as a guide. You don't have to use the mat, but it makes it nice to be able to tell what you're actually focusing on, and you're better able to get the entire page.
Does that help with contrast too, perhaps? Putting it on a consistent surface?
That I really couldn't speak to, but it's very possible in terms of getting rid of some of that sort of reflection and glare that you sometimes get.
There's actually a couple on each corner. There's two L's on each corner.
Right, so you can use different sizes of paper. You can place envelopes between those sort of hashes. You can do business cards. You can do 8.5 by 11. It's not quite as easy to do a two-page book at once. That takes a little bit of fun and trial and error just to make sure that you get all of the edges.
Is there room to fit it though?
There is room to fit it. So it
once
is
you get
possible.
Used to it.
It's just that's the biggest challenge.
Right. Okay, let's hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to demo this with DocuScan Plus on the PC. We're also demoing this with DocuScan Plus on the Mac, and that will be available soon. So the camera works with either, and DocuScan Plus is going to be available on both platforms. So I have DocuScan Plus running here. I'm just going to go to the simple scan option.
Simple scan. I assume it's running with system access over here.
Yes. DocuScan Plus, though, is self-voicing, so if you're using this along with another screen reader, that's not going to be any problem. In those windows, then DocuScan Plus will do its thing, and you can switch over to your other windows, and your screen reader will take over at that point.
Okay.
So I'm going to continue, and we'll take a picture of some unknown page that we have here. I have no idea what we're testing with, so
awesome.
I'll be as surprised as anybody.
This may take a minute.
We get the feedback
that we're supposed to believe you that you've never seen this page before?
I have not.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Processing the page. This may take a minute.
Anybody can say that.
This page is right side up, with number 820, and number 249,150.
Oh, it's an invoice.
Number 1,295,500.
Well, maybe we should.
Wow, okay, yeah.
We can cut that out.
Well, it's not a big deal. I don't think it had any sensitive information, but there you have it. I really had no idea what
page was. What would you say the time is from the time they took the picture to when it starts reading in general?
It's probably about 25 seconds. Now, at this point, we are recognizing the page on the PC. We have DocuScan Plus installed on the PC, so the OCR is happening locally. The image doesn't have to be uploaded anywhere. However, if you're using this from DocuScanPlus.com, which you could do from any public computer or just a machine that wasn't yours, in that case, the OCR is going to happen in the cloud, so you don't have to install anything on the machine in order to use DocuScan Plus.
So speaking of the cloud, you're also working on mobile apps that would tap into that cloud.
We are, and we haven't quite gotten far enough to be able to talk about release dates with any of those yet, but obviously the idea, as with anything from Saratech, is to be able to access any of your information from any of your machines or portable devices.
Okay.
For the iPhone app, that is most likely going to be something that is free access once you own the PC or Mac version. So it isn't something that you're going to just be able to have an app for a portable device without owning the desktop or Mac version as well.
So using the cloud, if I took a picture of something using my iPhone, it can... Is it optionally, or it can somehow end up on the cloud that I can then come back to my computer later and read it, or is that the idea? Or?
That is the idea eventually with an iPhone app, is to be able to do this in the same way that DocuScan Plus on the PC or Mac is done, where you take a picture and any of the stuff that you've scanned, regardless of what device it's coming from, should still be accessible from the cloud.
Okay. So...
for example, if you're using this both on the Mac platform and the PC platform, you could scan something on your Mac. You could then go to school with your netbook and access what you had done from the Mac previously.
Okay. As far as scanning or recognizing text from images, PDFs, things like that, is any of that possible?
Yes, we do support PDF recognition. We don't do TIFFs or JPEGs at this point, but... If you're using DocuScan Plus, you can either use a document camera, a traditional flatbed, or you can just use PDFs with it. You can do batch scan, auto-read scan, which is it's continuing to recognize, it's continuing to OCR in the background, and you're able to read previous pages as you continue scanning.
Okay. The DocuScan, so you can get just the software, or you can purchase it with the...
The camera, correct. So if you already have a scanner at home, let's say one of these really light Canon scanners that can plug into any machine, they don't require any drivers, pick up DocuScan Plus for $300 and you've got yourself a really nice portable solution. If you want the camera, we're going to be shipping those in a couple of weeks and those will be $499.
Mm-hmm. Is there a combo price for the two or would it just be $799?
It's just $799 at this point.
Okay, and you said shipping in a couple weeks.
Yes.
What is the underlying scanning engine, OCR engine?
We're using the Nuance engine, so it's the same engine which is used in OmniPage.
Okay. Speaking of OmniPage, is this camera also compatible with other software, or does it just work with DocuScan?
This is a mainstream camera. Mm-hmm. It does come with some extremely inaccessible software,
sure.
Which luckily you don't have to install. It most likely does work with other mainstream scanning solutions, though we haven't tested that extensively ourselves.
Sure. Okay. So looking towards the future, any other features that you guys are working on that you know, over the next few months? Or
you'll just have to wait and see. If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Oh, man. All right. If people want to get more information about all this, how can they do this?
The best thing to do is you can visit www.docuscanplus.com and there you'll actually get a 7-day trial of the program that you can use with whatever happy scanner you have at the moment. You can also give Saratech a call. We're at 612-246-4818.
Okay. One more question. Is the product going to be available as a Surface offering, or is it just a one-time fee at this point?
At this time, it's just an outright purchase.
Okay. Is that something you're considering? Or?
That, again, you'll have to stay tuned.
Okay. Ricky, thank you so much.
You've been listening to Saratalk. Visit us at www.saratalk.com. Send us an email at resources@saratalk.com or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.